to the Surratt Brothers Podcast, a conversation about church, sports, current events, and mostly church. Today, we talk with our friend Lance Witt about how to lead high-impact teams with a healthy soul. We also find out who will win March Madness, how to avoid sin in Vegas, and what Presbyterians eat. Now, join me and my brothers for the podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. Hey, big treat today. We've got a full complement of Surratt Brothers right here on the podcast. Greg, you look like you've pulled over to the side of the road. Are you being arrested, or where are you at right now?
Just hanging out in my Jeep. Nice. Living the life. Yeah.
And Chris?
I'm actually at the retreat at Church Creek, sitting in my Jeep so I can be by myself.
Looking through the windows, it looks like a beautiful day. Is the weather nice?
It's amazing. 75 degrees. The azaleas are blooming. We caught some big fish today. It's amazing.
Nice. Hey, before we bring Chris in, Greg, do you care what the weather is in Maui today? Because I don't at
no,
all.
No, I don't.
Good.
It's hey, so Chris. Boring there.
It is. It's boring. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm pretty good. So would this be like a three of a kind, royal flush? I mean, what would we call having all three of us on the podcast? It's got to be something important.
I'd call it three deuces, like the lowest three you can have and still be
three twos.
Three twos. Yeah. But I know nothing about gambling, which, by the way, in a couple of weeks, speaking of not gambling, we're headed out to Las Vegas. Sherry and I are going to take
Sin
the
City.
Week. Thank you. Thanks for ruining my little story, my little... One story. What are you drinking? Are you drinking like a hard seltzer there, Chris? Tough morning? Or?
No, I'm getting some wings from my Red Bull.
Red Bull.
Is there alcohol in there or not?
What time is it? It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Yeah.
No, it's not five o'clock in Maui. No, we're gonna go out. I know, Chris, you and Jenny, I think, enjoy sometimes heading out to Vegas. Like, I want to talk about you do it. A little bit different than probably your average high roller as far as how you spend most of your time. Greg, have you spent time in Vegas? Do you like Vegas? Hate Vegas?
No, I love Jesus.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I also like Vegas.
Good.
You know what Jesus loves is non-liars.
Yeah. You know, he's not big on self-righteousness either. There's like whole chapters about that. So we'll let Greg just listen. Chris, what do you do when you go to Vegas?
We love Vegas. We use it more as a kind of a stay center point. So we'll go. You can usually get a hotel for really cheap, a nice hotel, because they want you to spend all your money in the casino. So they'll give you a room for pretty cheap. And so we'll stay. And then we use it to go out, and there's some amazing like national parks within 3 to 4 hours. I think you guys are doing this, but we've gone multiple times to Zion and done hikes there. I did the Narrows last time, which is a famous hike where you walk through water, through most of it, but you're in a canyon, which is unbelievable. And then you can also get food for fairly cheap because, again, they would like for you to spend most of your money losing at the blackjack tables. So it's actually a good place to base out of. And there's some fun shows. We'll do shows. What are you guys going to do?
So is Zion good? Like, is that fun? Like, I've heard of it, but I've never been.
Zion is amazing. It's the best hikes I've ever been on, even here in Hawaii. There's one that the Narrows is awesome. You got to do that. But then there's one that's called Angel's Landing that is the most difficult hike I've ever done in my life. But once you do it, it's just addicting. So you guys got to do that.
So by hike, you're like talking about walking uphill? Is that?
Way, way uphill. Angel's Landing is like straight up.
Yeah, we don't do that.
But why would you want to do that? Really?
We don't. We walk flat. Like we are going out to Zion. Hopefully you can see cool stuff without walking uphill. Part of the reasons is Sherry tends to pass out whenever we take a hike uphill. So that kind of runs the trip, you know, because you got to kind of leave her beside the trail and come. No, I've never left her beside the trail. So Greg, have you been to Zion National Park?
Nope. Only time I've been to Vegas is for, you know, like a 1 day conference or whatever. I went one time when we were looking at buildings and the architect said some of the best buildings around are in Vegas. And so we went out there. I went to a show I think I saw O.
It's a good one.
Yeah. And so that's it for me. Debbie's never been.
So buildings.
Yeah. We that's usually like go to the, we go to the Holy Land and stuff, you know, we don't usually go to Vegas.
Yeah. It's buildings. So you guys are going to build the Sphere?
I was going to say.
What a great venue. You guys should do that. Yeah. Seacoast Sphere. Yeah. It even
talk about a multi-site. You can do the video, like the pastor, like all in the whole thing.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That'd be great. Greg doesn't know what the Sphere is. I can tell by the look on his face.
I've not been there. I'm sure it's nice though.
We're going to go see the Cirque du Soleil Michael Jackson show. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I love Mike. I mean, whatever you think about Michael Jackson, I love his music. Like his music is, I like it. You know how every sound guy has their song that they like to dial the sound system in with, and it's usually not a Christian song. The guy at the latest venue we just opened, his song is Billie Jean. You have not started a Sunday morning until you started it with Billie Jean just pumping out of the speakers. So, yeah, we're going to go see that.
I think we've seen all of the major Cirque shows there, and Michael Jackson is probably third in line. Beatles Love would be number one. O would be number two just because the water's unbelievable. But then the Michael Jackson one is really fun.
We saw, we loved it. I want to see the Beatles. Sherry's not a big Beatles fan. I'm a huge Beatles fan. In fact, did you guys watch yesterday the movie? I watched that again. I watched it again the other day. It was, it's on Netflix now. Fun to watch. So here's the big news though we have to hit. Have you guys filled out your bracket yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Greg, who you got? Who you got going all the way?
You know, I just sent by video, a chapel for the College of Charleston.
Yeah.
Cause I'm the season ticket holder there. Got them going all the way. I have one bracket that is places I've lived, and, I've got a final four of, I think, a couple of Carolina teams, Colorado and Illinois. So,
well, it's good to be loyal, but that's not going to be a strong bracket. I'm guessing.
We'll see.
I'm excited though. We've got Colorado has two Colorado teams in, and here's trivia. And Colorado is not a basketball state at all. But here's trivia for you. DU, Denver University, came within 10 points of making the tournament. They had a terrible year, terrible record, and made it to the finals and lost by 10. We would have had three schools in the bracket. Who you got, Chris?
Well, this week, Colorado State just put it to Virginia. ACC
they put a dumping on Virginia.
They really did. Yeah. Yep.
I've got Houston. Couple of things going there. One is they've got a really good team, and I think they do have a chance. Two, I attended the University of Houston.
Did you? Did you graduate from the University of Houston?
Almost.
Greg, just real quick. Greg, where did you graduate from again?
You know, I've got a doctorate degree from Southeastern University. Either one of you or not?
I didn't ask where you got a mail-in degree. Like, where did you graduate from?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. But I'm the only one here with a degree. I hate to bring it up, but it's really true.
My wife is a proud alumni of the University of Houston.
But I'll get back to that. That's important. But speaking, Greg, the school you got kicked out of and the school I graduated from changed their name. They changed their name.
I saw that. So what I wondered is, does that nullify the fact that I got kicked out of there?
I think so.
That's kind of what I was. Yeah.
So my undergrad, I think
that's cleansed.
I did my first 2 years at Central Bible College, which, as we all know, no longer exists. And then I graduated from Southwestern Assembly of God University, which as of now no longer exists. So I have an accredited degree from nowhere. So that's fantastic. Sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was going to say my high school no longer exists. And apparently when it went under, they decided to dump all of the records. So I was trying to do some college stuff online, and there's no record of me ever attending or graduating high school, which is wonderful. It's awesome. But
I don't remember Chris graduating from high school. Do you, Greg?
No, I don't. I don't think he would even
win. I don't think it ever happened.
I don't remember the actual graduation, but there's other things that went into that. But I do give this caveat on my pick for the bracket. I have watched 0 minutes of college basketball since January 1st, mainly because I live, as you like to point out, on Maui, and the games are always at about 1 p.m. So I've watched so I know nothing, and I'll probably do better because of that fact.
Yeah, Greg, you're way ahead of me because you're a season ticket holder, right, at College of Charleston. Yeah, so you've seen a lot of ball. I haven't seen any. And I can go you one further, Chris. Obviously, I'm going to watch some March Madness. I'm more excited about the women's tournament. The South Carolina story is amazing. That coach, her story, she's probably the best basketball player / coach. She coached Temple into the tournament while she was playing professional basketball in the WNBA. She was doing both at the same time. Then she retired, went to South Carolina. And then forgot the girl out of Iowa.
Caitlin Clark.
Oh my goodness. And the LSU story and maybe some revenge going on there. And then Carolina got in the big fight with LSU.
Did you see the fight?
Oh, I saw the fight.
Did you see the fight? That was amazing.
Did you see the ratings for that game? Were one of the highest rated college games ever. I'm much more interested in the women's tournament. I think it's going to, well, they have to get the early rounds out of the way. The challenge, I think personally, with the women's side, with college, is you've got those top 6 or 8 teams. Below that, it drops off.
Did you see how many? I saw a statistic the other day that, you know, we like March Madness because the underdogs, you always have a 12 beat a 5. And, you know, and last year there was a 1 beat a 16. But that never happens in women's ball. Never, ever. No. There are no upsets.
No.
Yeah. I was looking at South Carolina's scores this year, and almost every score was a complete blowout. Blowouts to the point, it's like, they beat a team 101 to like 18. And it's like, come on. That's not
Here's the problem with March Madness in general. And I love March Madness. I watch as much as I can. But in the beginning, we're all rooting for those big upsets. We want the 16 over the 1, all of that stuff. And a couple of years recently, it's happened where you end up with like a top 8, a final 8 of a 5, an 8, a 10, and a 2. And suddenly it's not as fun because are you really wanting UAB to, you know, make it to the finals against WKU? No, you want the powerhouses. So it's good at some point.
I don't know. When it's a real underdog, who was it last year that made it to the Final Four?
San Diego State and Florida Atlantic.
Florida Atlantic was the one I was thinking of. That was still fun to me. Like, I still liked watching that.
If there's one, it's awesome. If there's like 3 of them.
Yeah, that's true. You know what?
Debbie and I last year watched the first time really I've ever been that enamored with the women's because South Carolina was so good. And so we watched them a couple times. Then we watched them play Iowa. And I had no idea. I was clueless. I didn't know who Caitlin Clark was. And immediately I was a fan. Watched Iowa actually beat them. And then I watched Iowa, play against LSU. And have tried to catch as many Caitlin Clark games this year as I can. It's just when you've got an athlete like that, it's just amazing.
I think it won't happen. I think a NBA team ought to take a flyer on her. I think defense would be a struggle. But when Steph Curry came in, they said he couldn't play defense, and he does okay. Yeah. But as a designated 3-point shooter, when you look at where she hits from, she hits consistently from the circle at half court. Like, that's a consistent shot for her. I tell you what's ruining. I just watched a little bit of ball and I think the transfer portal is doing more damage to basketball than it is to football because none of these kids are coming out or going to whatever. And then they all wind up getting, because the top kids get drafted. So the kids who don't get drafted migrate to the Kentuckys and all of that. They got to fix it. So we try to hit a one dead dumb headline each week. Here was the one that caught my eye. Oscar Mayer debuts vegan hot dog. So that's one of those headlines where I don't click on it. I don't need to read anymore. Like, it's all in the headline. Oscar Mayer has created a vegan hot dog. There's my question for you. Would you eat a vegan hot dog?
Here's my
not
thing.
A chance.
No, no. But I barely want to eat a real hot dog. Now, I will at a baseball game, but have you ever looked into what's actually in the meat of a hot dog, of a real meat hot dog? They don't even, the ones that make it don't even know. You have no idea what's in that mess. And so I wouldn't.
Well, maybe a vegan hot dog would be less of a risk. You know, I hadn't thought about that.
That's a great point. Cause like in a regular hot dog, there's every chance Ed's pinky is in there. Like if that falls into the grinder, but that would make it not vegan. Greg, you eat hot dogs, right? Don't you go to like Scoogies?
All the time.
Yeah.
I go to every little dive around. I eat, I mostly eat, bratwurst though, which is just a level up.
That's not a hot dog. That's a real piece of meat right there.
Yeah. Here's what I don't understand. Why are vegans, and some comedian pointed this out, but why are vegans always trying to make stuff taste like meat? Like we have something that tastes like meat. It's called meat. Just eat it. You know, there's no carnivore going, hey, could you make this steak taste like broccoli?
I have two vegetarian daughters, actually pescatarian because they'll eat fish, but nobody knows what that means. So I have some research on this, and it usually kind of sort of tastes like something like meat, but it costs twice as much. We're in the grocery store picking out, you know, both of our kids have come to Maui. So we're picking them out some, you know, stuff from the grocery store, and it's double the cost for a patty of almost kind of sort of meat. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry,
Chris. You know what I would do if that was my daughters? I'd give them a fishing rod and say, knock yourself out.
What did you say they are? What's the word?
Pescatarian.
Presbyterians.
Pescatarian? Yeah. Is that,
pescatarian.
Is that the thing John, fish. Is that the thing John Knox started, like out of Scotland?
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Yep.
Oh, wait, no, that's Presbyterian. Right. It's, yeah. Okay. What do Presbyterians eat? Anything they want. Well, a lot of times they eat Presbyterian pastors for lunch. If you're Presbyterian and you're not laughing, you have not got on the wrong side of the presbytery yet. Hey, Chris, we have a new sponsor this week. Sponsor
we
that, tell us a little bit about Rooted.
Yeah, very excited about this. Rooted is a discipleship experience, and we're actually launching it this fall at my church at Harvest. We're going to do 10 weeks, go through the 10 weeks. We're also doing it from the stage. It's going to be an all church deal, but it helps you start groups with the discipleship culture. Thousands of churches from around the country have gone through the Rooted experience. Some of the largest churches, Seacoast, I understand, has done Rooted in the past, but it's based on 7 rhythms of spiritual disciplines. And then they take you through it in a group experience. You do some of them together. There's like a week or two on giving and on serving and just all these things that we're trying to disciple our people through, but it gives a systemized just process for them to go through in community. And so it's really cool. I'm very excited. They're sponsoring this. If you want to check it out, you can go to experiencerooted.com. You can get a free a sample of it, or you can attend a webinar. So Rooted.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Rooted for a long time. It's fascinating to me. We were just looking again. It'd been a few years since I knew it had originally come out of Africa, but it came out of Kenya, a great church in Nairobi, which is fascinating. Yep. And then I think Mariners out in California kind of helped develop it into the American experience. But great discipleship program. So this weekend is kind of fun. Sherry and I, we're not going to Vegas this weekend. We're actually speaking. We're speaking together at a church. Greg, you know Daniel Rolfe. I don't think Chris does.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. So we're great speaking. Guy. We're speaking at Mountain Springs, and we're talking. We're speaking about marriage. And so as I was getting ready, you know, you always get the email from the church that says, you know, send us your notes 6 months in advance and color code them this way and make sure they're all capital. And, you know, I try to cooperate, but I basically what I do. But I was thinking, what is your worst speaking gig ever? I mean, you don't have to use a church name, or you can, but the worst speaking gig, it can be preaching, it can be a workshop. What's the worst gig you ever had speaking?
I'll go first, and this one's hard to beat. Everybody I talk to and tell, they just make this painful face. But it was while I was at Lifeway, and I did a lot of workshops, traveled around the country, and some of them were great, some of them were not so great. But we were doing an experiment at the SBC, at the conference. We had a booth, Lifeway had a booth out in the middle of the conference floor, and we decided we would do like these scheduled seminars all during the day that people could come to. And I had one coming up. And there were zero people. I mean, we were doing some big thing in the conference hall, so nobody's even in the center, but they said, you got to go ahead and do it and see if people show up. So I started teaching literally to nobody. There was nobody in front of me. There was nobody behind me. There was nobody in the hall, but I'm teaching like I'm giving it everything I've got. Eventually, a couple people, I think they're on the way to the bathroom, they felt sorry for me. They sat down for a couple minutes, then they left. So I taught to zero people.
That's so good. It wasn't speaking. I had a similar conference experience out in the exhibition hall or whatever.
That's where we were.
So we had published a book with Zondervan. And so they said, we want you to come and do a book signing. So co-authors Greg Ligon and I are there. And our third co-author was Dr. Warren Bird, but he wasn't there. So Greg Ligon and I are standing there, and it's crickets. There's nobody. Nobody cares about us. Nobody cares about our book. Nobody cares about multi-site. I'm walking by. Finally, a guy walks up. The two of us are standing right there, walks up, picks up a book, goes, oh, Warren Bird, and walks away. That's great. Greg, your worst speaking gig.
Oh, gosh. I've got so many of them. Two of them are, they're the same thing, exponential. And I love Dave Ferguson and, they're some of my favorite people in the world, but in trying to honor Billy Hornsby and I, one of the first times we came, they gave us a breakout session in the big auditorium at Baptist World. And at that point it would seat like 6,000 people. And there may have been 200 people in the room. And which would have been a great breakout, but they were scattered in 6,000 seats. That was awful. And then another one there was, we got one of the, they had Chris Hodges, myself, and Joe Champion and Rick Bizet talking about church planting, I think. And they had us out in this breakout that was way out somewhere. And there were four people there, four people. I remember walking back through the crowd and Rick Bizet said, I don't think this is our crowd, bro. That was way back in the day.
And my
worst one was, may have been when I was a mentor with Leadership Network. It was Larry Osborne, Mark Driscoll, and myself. And they came to a breakout time and they said, okay, choose your table. Mark Driscoll is going to be out here around his fireplace. Larry Osborne's going to be over here. Greg Surratt's going to be, over here by the bathroom. And, the only two people that came to my deal was your wife and Linda Stanley. And so anyway, that was very humbling.
So if you were choosing, would you choose you, Larry, or Mark?
No, I made them change the rules. I said, we will never have choose your own deal anymore. You're going to divide everybody up. It's going to be equal. And that's how we roll from here on. That's how we roll. And
I remember walking by the room when Chris Hodges was speaking in that breakout. Chris Hodges, pastor of Church of the Highlands, leader, all ARC, all that stuff. And I peek my head in and there's four people in the room.
They've wandered into the wrong room.
So painful. I was doing a workshop one time. Three people came. And so I'm talking, I look down at my notes, I look up just in time and see one of them walking out. And so I just said, you know what, any questions? All right. You know, you reminded me though, Greg, of one of my most terrifying ones. It was actually a lot of people came to it. It was exponential again. And now Dave Ferguson. It's a whole different world now. But back in the day, it was a little disorganized. And so I show up at a workshop and it's me and it's Larry Osborne and it's Dave Ferguson. And I walk in, they walk in, the two of them look at me and say, what's this workshop supposed to be about? And I said, I don't know. I just was told I was supposed to be here. People are coming in, like it's starting in 2 minutes. And they looked at me and said, well, sounds like you're going to lead us through a Q&A.
If Dave doesn't know what's going on, you're in trouble there.
We did 60 minutes of Q&A. So
I don't know what's wrong with you guys, but I've always had a packed house for my exponential workshops. And always had a great experience. Never had a bad experience.
I
did find the key to a packed house at Exponential, Greg. I did a workshop in that main auditorium one time too. We didn't have 300. We had about 50. But I did another workshop, did several with Sherry on marriage, and it was packed to the gills, and we had about 50. So the key is to get into smaller,
right size room.
So I mentioned we're going speaking at a church, and I know I've just had horrendous experiences, not just speaking, but like going to a church, rolling up, nobody greets me. I don't know anybody there. I don't know where I'm supposed to go. I've hunted down a sound man before who's a volunteer to see if maybe I could have a microphone. One service, it was 10 minutes to start. I didn't have a microphone. I had not seen the slides. There had been no sound check. I finally, way up in the balcony, went up there and found a guy who would give me a microphone. And so I just started a newsletter. It's kind of the same newsletter I used to do under another organization, but now doing it under the Ministry Together banner and talking about our podcast. And last week, Greg, you had me on the Facebook Live and we talked about some of the bullpen preacher stuff. So I in last week's newsletter, I put some of the bullpen preacher.
Yeah, I saw stuff. That.
Yeah, yeah. So this week I'm gonna put some guidelines for hosting a guest pastor. Like if you're going to host a guest pastor, here's some things to think about. Yeah. So what do you think? What's one or two I ought to put in there? Either one of you guys, what should I put in this guidelines when you're hosting a guest pastor?
I would say, I'll say this up front. I've done a few gigs, not Sunday mornings, but some other stuff for art churches and they do the best.
Oh, they do. They absolutely
are amazing. Like they walk you through everything. They have somebody with you the whole time. They have a room for you. They have, so just go to an art church and learn what they do. But, some of mine were, let the speaker decide on what the travel arrangements are. Cause my worst thing is when we'll pick you up at 8 a.m. and we've got a hotel for you and here are your plans. No, I want to decide that stuff. I mean, it just, for me personally. And then specific instructions on what they want. What do you want in the content for the message? How long do you want the message to be? Because I've gotten some, they're like, just do whatever you want. And then I found out later it's not at all what they wanted or needed. And so just, you know, be as specific as you can up front with what the expectations are for the gig.
How about you, Greg?
Yeah, just and as Chris mentioned, I go to a lot of art churches. I've been to a lot of art churches and for whatever reason, they seem to do a good job. I need to know, I think everybody needs to know when you walk into a room, who's in charge and where are we going? And so when you walk into a city or you walk into a hotel or you walk into a church, who's in charge? Who's running this and what are the expectations and be as clear as possible as you can with that. And that's so important.
So good. I think the best hosting I ever had was at John Siebling's church. And my daughter came along and I said, it's just gonna be boring. You're not gonna love it. We get there, huge gift basket, money to spend. Somebody's assigned to me. Somebody's assigned to my daughter to see if there's anything we need. It was an amazing experience, but it was funny. I was supposed to speak on Sunday morning and right before I got there, I got a text from John and said, hey, I just found out Reinhard Bonnke's going to be here this weekend. Would it be okay if he spoke instead of you? So I got bumped by Reinhard Bonnke,
did you get to keep the gift basket?
I did get a keep the gift basket, and John graciously had me stick around for a leadership meeting that night because, hey, I'm in town. Why not?
A gift basket at the hotel seriously goes a long way.
It really does. It's so kind. And what here is something though on gift baskets. This is when you know you're being overly picky. If your speakers flew in on Saturday night, is flying out on Sunday morning, they only brought a carry-on with them. They cannot put that gift basket in their suitcase. So that beautiful wicker basket, and it's fine, but the maid is going to take that home with her because
I've blessed a lot of
where
maids.
To put it. Yeah.
I have and
too. Bottles of liquid and can't take any of that stuff, but mm-hmm. doesn't matter. Thought counts.
One place gave me a knife, a little pocket knife with the, that they give to visitors. And that got absconded at the airport. That was fun explaining my way out of that.
Didn't one very popular, famous speaker one time, they gave him a gun and
we're not gonna left talk it about in that.
The,
yeah.
The, I don't think that was in a gift basket, but that we probably ought to
let it was that gifted go. Though. It was gifted.
It was gifted. It
was a gift. Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of guests, we're going to talk to my friend, our friend. We all know Lance and it's good. A great friend. Lance has been in ministry for like 40 years. He was a senior pastor of, I think, three churches before he went to Saddleback Church with Rick Warren. I'll ask Lance to confirm this, but I think he was there for 7 years in an executive pastor role. If any of you as church leaders have done 40 Days of Purpose or 40 Days of Community, Lance was actually the guy behind that very first 40 Days of Purpose campaign. When he left, he started something called Replenish. We'll talk to Lance about that. He's written books. One's called Replenish. One's called High Impact Teams. I'll have to ask him the latest book. I can't remember the name of it, but let's welcome our friend Lance Witt. All right. This is such a privilege, Lance, to have you on the podcast today with us. And we have the whole band here today, as you can see. Greg and Chris are joining us from really opposite ends of the earth, like Maui and somewhere in the rural South Carolina. So Lance, we got to kick off with a strange question. I understand this is not your first podcast today, but I'll guarantee you this is your first time to be asked this. We talked a little bit earlier about your worst speaking gig ever. Now I'm not talking about a job that you work there, but a guest preaching workshop, something like that. Lance, what was your worst speaking gig ever?
Well, probably the one that immediately came to my mind was when I was on staff at Saddleback Church. I was one of the teaching pastors, but one year Rick thought it would be great to have services on Sunday night during Super Bowl Sunday. And of course, I got designated to do that service. And I remember coming Sunday night and they had not, put up the stanchions to block off the bleachers. So there were in this 3,100 seat auditorium, about 300 people scattered all over. And it was 300 people who didn't get invited to a Super Bowl party. And I just remember Rick Muchow as he was walking off the platform and I was walking up to the podium and he said, good luck. It's really rough out there. That was not a great moment, to get the short straw and get to preach Super Bowl Sunday night.
You know, you reminded me, we didn't cross paths, but we both worked at Saddleback at one time, different times. We'll talk about that a little bit, but I didn't mention this earlier, worst speaking experience. So I walk in at 4:20 on a Saturday night back to the green room, and Stevie Kamanapali, who was Rick's right-hand guy, says, hey, has Rick seen you? I said, no, man, what's up? He said, oh, he wants you to be the backup preacher tonight. And so, somebody has to sit on the platform. Greg, you did this in Orlando, I think, for Rick. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to sit on the platform ready to speak. So I said, okay. And so Rick pulls me into his office and goes, all right, here's what we're speaking tonight. I'm going to do this and this and this. I'll pull you up for this. And then boom, we walk on stage and there's that 3,500 seat auditorium, the Saturday night crowds there. I've never seen this sermon before in my life. I'm sweating bullets. I'd only spoke once at Saddleback. He didn't call on me. So then he says, forgot you're back there. Okay, tomorrow you're going to do point three. So Lance, I stay up all night, like getting ready, like reading the books, reading the stories, I'm ready. So we do, I don't remember how many Sunday mornings, two, three Sunday mornings, I'm on stage the whole time. Rick never calls on me. And then he goes that weekend, that's the weekend he went an hour 10 at the end of him speaking at the last one. People are streaming out, right? They're gone. They're done. He comes back, he sits down, he says, "All right, man, that's what happens when you go an hour 10. All right, close it out. See ya." He went home. So you were at Saddleback for like how many years? How many years were you there?
It was only 7, but it seemed longer.
Yeah, I was there 12 months, and it seemed a little longer than 12 months as well. Great church, love Rick, but man, it can be a lot. So when you were, as I mentioned before, you came on, you were executive pastor there and led purpose-driven 40 Days of Purpose and all those kinds of things. But then you left Saddleback and you started Replenish. And I love your focus at Replenish. Your focus is leading from a healthy soul. It's also leading high-performing teams from a healthy place. It's not just let's all, you know, kind of kumbaya together, but let's go do something together and accomplish something. What led you to focus on this leading from a healthy soul and high-performing teams when you left Saddleback?
Yeah, it sounds nice when you say I left Saddleback and started Replenish. It's really not that clean. I left Saddleback just in a pretty unhealthy place. I often tell people that season of my life was both the most intoxicating and toxic all at the same time. Like, it was an amazing rocket ride of ministry influence, but purpose-driven life emerged on the scene when I was there. And that was such a game changer for Rick and his world, but also for all of us around him. And I just wasn't in a healthy place. Wasn't leading myself well, workaholic. The pace and the pressure was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. And finally just came to this place of realizing, like, I didn't just need a different way to do ministry. I needed a different way to do life. And I knew I couldn't do it from within. And so we stepped out. I didn't have another place to go, another church. Just knew that I had to reinvent myself in some ways. And so when I left, I was 46 years old, confused, kind of lost. I just assumed I'd go back and be a senior pastor. That's what I'd known. And it was actually on a plane ride to Singapore. I'd been scheduled to speak at this thing in Asia, and I was middle of the night, everybody's asleep on the plane, and I'm just confused and just crying out to the Lord, like, God, what do you want me to do in this season of my life? And it really was desperate. And I've had very few mystical experiences, but God really met me in that moment and said so clearly, I want you to help leaders be healthy, holy, and humble. And that, of course, that was very Saddleback, right? Even God alliterated. But that's what I heard in that moment. And I remember thinking, like, I could give my life to that. I didn't know what that looked like practically. I wasn't in a healthy place at that moment, but I thought, I love pastors and leaders. And I began to, that was the seed of what eventually became Replenish, which is kind of the mantra we use is to help people live and lead from a healthy soul. And so I just began to try to figure out how I could come alongside leaders and pastors and their teams and initially really focus on helping them live from a healthy place. But as I got into it, realizing, oh, we could also help with helping them be high performing as a church and as a team. So that began to be a piece of it a little bit later down the road.
So we've talked about this a little bit earlier, Greg. You lead the retreat at Church Creek. Lance, I know you're on the board, I think, or you were at one point at the Refuge, which is a similar ministry. I think, Greg, you helped early on with the Refuge a bit. And so what I wanted to ask you, Greg, and then I'll come back to you, Lance, is as you see, Greg, hundreds of pastors coming in through the retreat, like there's pastors there, right? I think you're out at the retreat now. There's pastors there this week, probably two groups coming through. How are pastors doing on that tension that Lance just mentioned, leading from a healthy soul while leading high performance teams? Like what do you see as you talk to all these guys coming through?
Yeah, it's a challenge. And what's interesting is, and I know, Lance, you've been with Brian out at Refuge in a similar dynamic. But like this week, we've got urban church planters. Several of them are also hip hop artists. Okay. And so it's a world as far away from my world as you could probably get. And so you go, how's all this going to work? And the problems are, the internal problems are all the same. It's, you know, it's hard. It's difficult. I think it always has been a challenge, you know, for pastors, but the environment that we're in now is unique. When's the last time you had a worldwide pandemic that just slaughtered everybody's church, you know? And then you've got all the racial tension and the politics and, you know, all of things. Then add to that, when I started Seacoast Church, if somebody didn't like our church or wanted to leave or whatever, they just laughed. Sometimes they would write a letter. I actually, my personality preferred that they didn't, just go quietly, you know, whatever. And I was just talking to a pastor today, not out here, it was on the way here. And, you know, someone gets mad at the church or something happens and they go right on Facebook and, or right on Instagram and, hey, we found a church that really preaches the gospel. And then the pastor will look at the comments and it's all the people that go to his church and their friends. And it's just all very immediate, very public. And that's not the only thing. I mean, I don't blame people for stuff. We all have our own individual things, but it's just the pressure of leading in today's environment with social media, COVID, you know, all of the politics, all of the things that are going on. I think it's just ratcheted up the pressure. I don't know if you see that, Lance, but how are guys doing? Not well. That's why places like Refuge and the retreat here at Church Creek, I got a number today that, you know, and Refuge is grown even bigger. They have multiple locations, but we've served almost 1,700 leaders in just our, you know, 3 years here. And you know, we're doing it twice a week and we have waiting lists. And so, yeah, it's big time right now.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that, Lance. Chris, though, I wanted to circle back because Greg mentioned some of the guys are hip hop artists. I remember, didn't you have a career as a hip hop artist in the early 90s? Weren't you kind of part of the hip hop Christian scene back then? Or
no, that was Bobby Grunwald from Life Church. But I see how you can mix this up.
That's right.
Similar.
Oh, no, you were
genius.
You were in a heavy metal hair band back then.
I was.
Back in, that's right.
I did have the hair.
I forgot about that.
And he was in a heavy metal hair band.
Yep.
Adonai, right?
Adonai.
Was the name of your band?
Yep.
Yeah. So
good times.
We'll pretend that never happened. Lance, so I'm sure you're seeing the same thing, both, you know, some of your work with Refuge, but also you work with lots of church teams. You work with a lot of pastors who pastor churches that people would recognize immediately. As you're working with these leaders, especially senior leaders, what are some things you're working with them on how to balance this idea, leading from a healthy soul while leading a high performance team? Like, what are some of the things we need to do? Like, how can we do this better?
Yeah, I think one, I just find myself, especially, you know, I think one, just somewhat sympathizing and acknowledging that, wow, it's really complex to lead today. And maybe more so than certainly any time in my lifetime. And so like what they are carrying, it's a thing and it's real and they feel it. And sometimes they wonder, like, am I going crazy? Am I the only one? And it's like, I think part of it's just acknowledging, like, no, the stress and the pressure is real. And so I find myself in a lot of what I would call kind of like conversations around life planning, like the taking ownership of their own life, taking ownership for the responsibility of the health of their own soul, grabbing their calendar by the throat and making sure that they have a healthy rhythm, you know, making sure they're not isolated relationally, because I think, you know, and that's why, you know, the retreat center that Greg has and Refuge is so important, because it provides sort of that unplugged, safe place where guys can just come and be together and chat and get honest and pray together and see some great community begin to build that hopefully transcends the few days that they're together, mm-hmm. you know, at the lake or around the campfire. And then I think on the team side, there's a whole different dynamic. And that is that I think we used to hire church staff members and come in and think, okay, they've got a biblical foundation. They've got some decent, you know, skills. And I think now, like, more and more people are going like, wow, as people are coming onto church staffs, they're not healthy. Like, their family, they got significant family of origin issues. They don't know what's appropriate to put on social media or not put on social media. Their finances are a mess. And so there's almost a sense in which you're having to help them get some basic life skills before you can even begin to get them to really contribute like you would want them to as a church staff member. So I think there's a bit of a deficit even as we think about building our teams, that we aren't starting. And not that it was ever great, but there were some basic things that were in place 20 years ago that maybe just aren't there as some of our younger staff are coming onto the teams.
You know, it's fascinating when you say that, Lance, because I remember Chris and Greg, remember when Mac Lake was with us and we began developing some of the leadership pipeline stuff. And one of the aha moments for me was when we started talking about that first level of leadership pipeline. We said, well, people don't know how to run a schedule. They don't know how to schedule their time. They don't know how to prioritize. And so we realized, oh, those are the skills you start with. What I'm hearing you say, Lance, is that's advanced level. We have to start back from that. We have to start with basic relational skills. And I recently had a conversation with someone who didn't like the way we were handling conflict resolution. And I'm thinking, this is conflict resolution 101, but probably had never really been walked through. Like, this is how you handle conflict in a healthy way. Hey, I'm curious about this, and this is a all skate. Love to hear from Lance, but Chris, Greg, weigh in. Sometimes I feel like a lead pastor, a senior pastor, might be the last person to realize they're leading a toxic culture, because sometimes they're a little bit insulated from the toxicity, or they're the source. How can a lead pastor kind of take the temperature, figure out, learn, discover how toxic is our culture? Let's throw that out. Lance, I'll throw it out and then go to you first. But what would you say?
Wow. I think, one, it's not easy, because often people are afraid to really tell the lead pastor the truth and to be really candid about what they're experiencing down in the team or down in the organization. And so I think the pastor has to work really hard to actually create an environment where people believe it's okay to have candor and to bring some broken stuff to the table and us have a conversation about it. And I think the number one, or one of the top things that shuts us down, is when a pastor becomes defensive, or he deflects or rationalizes away why that isn't true. And I've been finding myself in these recent years, like, when people bring me hard stuff, like, I have this conversation in my head, which I have a lot of those, by the way. But it's where I'm saying to myself, like, Lance, just listen. Don't get defensive. Don't power up. Like, hear what, like, there's something here that you need to hear. And I think, you know, there's a maturing that has to take place, I think, in leaders, where they can get to a place where their insecurities don't take over. And I think when I get defensive or power up or deflect or whatever, people go, yeah, he doesn't really want to hear, you know, what's going on. And I think the second thing on the personal side is, as a leader, you have to lean into, like, I got to grow in my self-awareness. There's a great quote. I wish it was original with me. It's not. It goes like this: self-awareness is your best defense against self-deceit. And I think for a lot of pastors out there, when it comes to the lid of their leadership with their teams, it's their lack of self-awareness. And so I think to lean into like, and I think you got to do some hard internal work around what some of the broken stuff in you that, that keeps you from being self-aware. You've got to go to people that you trust and like, hey, I want you to give me the last 10%, or I want to know what's it like to be on the other side of me. And I think you, and yet that just raises every insecurity in me. And so I think that's part of it as well, is like really leaning into your own self-awareness journey.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm so dumb. It was a few years ago. I was talking to my wife and we were talking about blind spots. And that's when it occurred to me. The reason it's a blind spot is because I can't see it. And exactly. I can't see it by trying harder to see it. Like I can't squint and see it. I've got to have help. I've got to have somebody else show me blind spots. Greg or Chris, when it comes to helping lead pastors, senior pastors, like see into their own culture, what kind of advice do you give?
I would add one thing. I agree with everything Lance said. I think it's also helpful for every once in a while to bring in a third party, like a Lance Witt, or I work with the Unstuck Group. Lance worked with the Unstuck Group for a long time. And just somebody who sees the cracks that the team no longer sees because they're always in the middle of it. I'll give you an example. I was doing a health assessment with a church, and part of the process with Unstuck Group is that they go through kind of a self-evaluation of how healthy is the church. And it's based on this curve of, you know, we're new, we're sustaining growth, we're growing all the way down to the bottom, which is on life support. And so I was with this church and they had taken the assessment and we're talking it through, and every single staff member had marked it as life support except for the senior pastor. And the senior pastor was not even close. He was like on the other side of the bell curve. And you could see, you know, that was extreme. I don't know that I would always want that to happen, but you could see the light bulbs go off with the senior pastor of, oh my goodness, I had no idea. I have to find out what's going on here. And so then we were able to have an open conversation that almost ended up in a fist fight between him and the executive pastor. Not kidding. But I think now they're still doing the process and they're in a healthier place. But I don't know that they would have gotten there if they hadn't had somebody else from the outside kind of drive them to that place.
That's super helpful. Greg, what were you going to say?
I just, for me, it was a process and is a process. I remember Chip Judd, who wrote the book with me, coming in and consulting with our team. And one of the things that he noticed is that over the years, I had gathered mostly people just like me because, you know, I'm the correct specimen that God wants to use. And so get as many people like me, you'll be good. And I'm a 3 Enneagram. Can we talk about Enneagram? Is that like demonic or not? I don't know. I really don't care at this point. It was helpful to me. And, you know, I'm a 3 Enneagram, which image means a lot. You're going to achieve and don't like confrontation. And let's just keep moving. And Chip comes in, and I remember one of the first executive teams, I think you were probably there, Jeff, he says, you guys don't fight enough about stuff. And I'm thinking, that's right. That's a goal. We don't. Well, you know, that's all we need to do. And through the Enneagram, I learned that 8s, which Chip is, and I think you are too, Jeff, to some degree. But when I thought 8s were yelling at me, I really did. I honestly thought that. And I don't want to be around people that yell at me. And that's been really, really helpful. And then when I left, I had never left. I'm still there. But one of the first things that Josh and Lisa did was bring in one of these companies that do, you know, how's your Christian workplace or whatever. And I was very skeptical of that because I saw some of the, you know, I know everybody just about. And I saw some of the churches that were scoring high on the Christian workplaces, and I knew they had a terrible environment. They had gamed the system somehow. And so why would we want to do that? And also, why would we want an open forum for people to anonymously tell us what's wrong with what's going on. And so I was on the that side of the whole deal. But Lisa was I think she's one of the best in that I've seen anywhere on culture. In fact, that's her whole job is culture. That's what she does is culture with the church. And so they took all of these. In a larger church, it's probably easier because small church, you know, you have three people on staff or five people on staff, and you kind of know who's saying what, even if it is anonymous. But for Seacoast, it was amazing. They came in and we didn't score as well as I thought we would. And I had feelings about that. And then they decided, okay, we're going to attack the areas that you guys tell us are not well. And they do that every year. And they actually, anywhere you've got more than one person on a team, you're going to have communication issues and somebody's not going to feel good about stuff, you know, all the time. But by and large, I mean, the employees tend to trust the leadership because they're actually listening and not just listening, but actually then trying to take steps, you know, to deal with whatever this year's issues are. They're always new ones. So that's been kind of eye opening for me.
Yeah.
And it's contrary to my personality.
Right. So I worked at a church not named Saddleback or Seacoast, and there was some major problems on staff and some of that. And so they brought in Best Christian Workplaces, did the same thing. They came back. They told us as a leadership team, they said that this is the second lowest score we've ever gotten of all the churches we've ever done. This is the second lowest we've ever gotten. The one that was lower, the lead pastor was literally stealing money from the staff. Like he was siphoning money out of their paychecks. That one was lower. And then the other thing they said is they do kind of a word salad thing and kind of how many times is this word mentioned and that word mentioned. And they said the number one word mentioned was elders. And they said, honestly, when we do this, the word elder never comes up. The number one word that mentioned here was elders. And so the elders looked at that and went, we know what to do. And so they got rid of the whole lead team. So I think that fixed it. I think that fixed it. Yeah. No, that idea of an outside voice is huge. Lance, I want to ask you one more thing. I know we only have a couple more minutes with you, but you mentioned it a while ago. You've walked, I don't know how many leaders, pastors through life plans and through a process. I think you started with kind of the Patterson process, and I think you've developed into your own process and walking men and women through this, the life plan thing. Talk to us just for a second. I know you have a book that is kind of talks about this a lot, but tell us a little bit about especially as a lead pastor or a staff pastor, why is it helpful to go through a process like that? What do people discover as they have someone else kind of walk them through a process?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've actually thought a lot about that. I think, so there's two or three pieces to this that I think make it so transformative and powerful. I think one is rarely in your life are you going to set aside as much time as we do when we walk through a life plan to really step back and look at your life and examine, you know, like, where are you at right now? Who are you? What are your values? What matters to you? Where do you want to go with your life? What's God doing in you? And so rarely in your life, you're going to set aside this much time in one block to really consider your entire life. And then I think also to have that outside person who can ask the right questions and probe around and help you get to the clarity that you're really after, and then help you sort of craft a way forward. I just feel like the combination of those elements create a great moment where someone can really get clear around how they're supposed to live. And I think right now there's just so much white noise and clutter in people's lives and so many voices speaking into them that to like, wow, just create space for unhurried conversation about who you are and where you want to go with your life, that can be a real gift to people. So I think that's part of what makes it really helpful and powerful.
I know my wife walked through, not with you, but with one of the guys from Patterson, did life planning, and it was transformational for her. Like it was a pivotal moment that she points back to of when she kind of figured out, I don't want to be on the road I'm on right now. I want to be on a different road. And fortunately I made the cut, which was surprising to me. Like I was a little nervous about, you know, the whole red light, green light, get rid of your husband light. Like I thought that
it is surprising. That'd be happen. It's surprising.
It is.
As well you should have been.
Yep. Everyone who knows me and knows Sherry, you know Sherry well, Lance, everyone's surprised that I'm still around, but here I am 42 years later. Hey Lance, we're going to link to all your books and to Replenish in the show notes, but remind me, it slipped my mind, I'm sorry, the name of your last book that we were just kind of referring to a little bit.
It's called Your One Life. It's kind of written to, like, the first two books are more leadership books for churches, church teams. This book was written to anybody who's a Christ follower, and kind of the premise behind it is like, how do you really steward well the one and only life you're going to get? And as someone who's, you know, been six decades on the planet now, I started by thinking about, like, if I could someday sit down with my grandkids when they're a little bit older and talk to them about what I've learned about how to do life, how not to do life, what would I share with them? So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Six decades. That's crazy. Oh, wait.
I know. Nobody else on this call is near that old, but.
Actually, Greg is the oldest on the call. And Lance, I'm right behind you. I was just doing the counting though. Yeah, six decades behind, but we're in our seventh decade here. So, which is crazy. Yeah. Chris is just a pup. He's he's only been here 5 decades. So not much wisdom there. So Lance, thank you.
We have about 250 years on this call. That's great.
Ouch. Oh,
scary.
It's amazing. We're all still upright and breathing. But the good news is we're going to go see Jesus a lot sooner than most people listening. So there you go. Lance, thank you so much. Thanks for taking time. Let's grab coffee again soon. Pegasus.
Thank you guys.
All right.
I appreciate all three of you and have such respect for all you guys. You guys are a tremendous family, and I honor you today. Thank you.
Thanks,
Lance. Hey, I want to talk for just a minute about our sponsor for this episode of the Surratt Brothers. It's Intentional Reach, and these guys are amazing at creating transcripts out of any audio or video that you might have on your website, whether it's a sermon. They've been doing sermons for a long time. They have done sermons for Seacoast and for a lot of other churches, but they also can turn podcasts, conferences, interviews, webinars. Basically, if it's spoken, they can transcribe it. And in fact, even if you need some things fixed, some grammar fixed, some things like that, they will do it. So it doesn't have to be perfect. And it can also help your online reach. Search engines love text, and so transcripts make the content that you produce even more searchable. And it's only about $400 a month. So it's a cost-effective way to expand your audience. So be sure to check them out, intentionalreach.com. Hit get your transcripts today.
Hey, Chris. So Lance, apparently Greg has been raptured, which is excited for him, or he ran out of time and left, but he's gone. So Chris, you have any thoughts from talking to Lance today?
Man, I love Lance. He is one of the most, I sat at dinner one time with him and I just listened to him all night. He's just one of those guys who just soothes your soul, and he's been through it and done it. And I would just listen to what Lance talks about. And the one thing I love about Lance is the life plan that you're talking about. He's lived it, he's done it. And I would encourage you, if you're looking, especially if you're looking for what's next in your life, or you're at a point where maybe, you know, I should go left or right, I would look up Lance and do the life plan. But in his books, Impact Teams, Replenish, I just recommended one of those to a church 2 days ago. So if you haven't done those, do them as a staff.
Yep. Lance is one of our one of our favorites. I mentioned there at the end, it probably sounded kind of weird. I yelled out the word Pegasus. I'm not speaking of the flying horse that Lance and I enjoy riding. That's the name of a breakfast place in, he lives about 30 minutes from me. So we meet there for breakfast on occasion. Hey, if you want to connect with Lance or any one of us, check out the show notes. We have links down there. We mentioned the newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter. All of Lance's books are linked down there. Also ways that you could connect with all three of us through social media. Hey, we'd love for you to click the like button because we're just that needy. Like Lance talks about a healthy soul, but Chris and I both need those likes. And also click on following the podcast. Actually, when you do that, it helps others find us. And we'd love to talk to more pastors. Hey, Chris, have a great week. And we will talk to you next week.
Yeah. All right. See you next week.